The Infrastructure Show is brought to you by Wyss Janney Elsner Associates, engineers, architects, and materials scientists, solving complex problems in contemporary and historic structures since 1956. Learn more at wje.com.
Welcome to the Infrastructure Show. I'm your host, Professor Joseph Schoeffer of Northwestern University.
And I'm your co-host, Tom Herman.
The Infrastructure Show is designed to present to listeners the reality of America's infrastructure, its condition, why it is the way it is, and what can be done about it.
Carmel, Indiana, a city of about 83,000 people located directly to the north of Indianapolis, has become informally known as the roundabout capital of the U.S. because of its embrace of the roundabout, a traffic concept more commonly found in Britain. Carmel has become a city nearly free of conventional four-way intersections, which means it is also nearly free of stop signs and traffic lights. At these roundabouts, traffic flows continuously in one direction around circular islands.
To find out why the city has adopted this design and what characteristics of the city have made the changes possible, we talk today with Carmel Mayor Jim Brainerd, the man who made the roundabouts happen. Jim, thanks for talking with us this morning.
Oh, it's great to be here with you.
So we saw a BBC article that called you America's evangelist in chief for the concept of roundabouts. Can you tell us how you first got interested in them?
Actually, I was in graduate school back in the early 80s in England, and I saw them. I'm trained as a lawyer, and I was a history major, so I don't have a civil engineering background. But when I became mayor, I challenged our city engineer. I asked her to tell us why we didn't build these things in the United States, and we started to do quite a bit of research. What we learned, and the U.S. hadn't built many at that point. We now have more than any other city in the United States. We're about 80 roundabouts in Carmel. But what we find, first of all, you reduce speeds. And more than anything else, that creates greater reaction time when somebody makes a mistake. We learn every continent on Earth has a range of accidents per million. It's usually 1 to 4 accidents out of every million cars through any type of intersection. So the question really becomes, are we going to be closer to 1 or closer to 4? It doesn't sound like many, but if you've got 100,000 cars a day through an intersection, suddenly that's a lot of accidents. Or even 50,000 cars, you can do the math. The other big advantage is that cars go through the roundabout 15 to 18 miles an hour, as opposed to, I know you guys wouldn't do it, I wouldn't do it, but I'm told some people actually speed up to go through yellow lights. I'm joking, but as you do that, and then you happen to hit that statistic, 1 to 4 out of a million in crash, it can be a very serious crash with lots of property damage, possibly a fatality or serious injuries. It's more dangerous for pedestrians. It's more dangerous for younger drivers and older drivers. So we have achieved an 80% reduction in injury accidents comparing the same traffic volume in a roundabout to a stoplight.
How many roundabouts have you built during your administration?
We've built them all in Carmel. We're right around 80. We've got 12 more coming in the next 2 years.
And did I understand that, are there any stop signs or stoplights at all in Carmel?
Yes, we still have some. We still have about 30 stoplights, and we've got some stop signs as well. Of course, we prioritize on the basis of which ones we're going to convert, on the basis of which ones are the most dangerous. Should also mention that stoplights aren't cheap. In this part of the country, $150,000 to install the stoplight with a pedestrian signal, the fancy ones. And you have to maintain it and replace it. It's made out of metal. It rusts. You have to put electricity and power the thing, a few $100 a year. But you add that up. As a mayor of a city, that starts to add up over time. Roundabout, and then there's electrical storm. So when the electrical storm comes along and knocks out the electricity, the roundabouts keep functioning. You've got to send a cop out and direct traffic at a traffic light. Here's one of the keys, too, is that a roundabout, you have 8 potential conflict points. At a traditional stoplight intersection, you have 32 potential conflict points when you take into account all the various turning motions.
Right. So I think I'm imagining, because left turns and things like that are eliminated in a roundabout, you just go around the roundabout till you get to your exit.
That's right. And one of the things you do, you don't necessarily have to stop. We put up yield signs as you turn into our roundabout. We also have a little center island, and it forces the car into an angle. So as you go into the roundabout, if there is a mistake and there's an accident, you tend to get a minor side swipe. It's almost like entering into an interstate lane. You're coming off that ramp and going in very, almost not quite parallel, but very close to parallel to the traffic in the roundabout.
It's as though you are merging with the traffic that's in the roundabout.
Exactly. Here's an interesting thing we found out. We found, you know, people in the Midwest are nice people. And they see somebody coming down the road, they might just tap on their brakes and stop and wait for them to go first. And we had a lot of that going on, a lot of hesitancy as people went in to the roundabout when we first built the first few. So we learned that by building up the centers of the roundabout with landscaping, even raising, you know, mounding the dirt 12, 18 inches, sometimes we put stone fences, sometimes sculptures, sometimes big flower, you know, 15-foot flower urns, it would eliminate, people couldn't see across the roundabout, but it would force them to look to the left, which is what they're supposed to do, to see if there's a gap, just like when you enter an interstate. And then I get the calls from some people who say, you know, I can't see across now, it's dangerous. And I have to explain to them, we did that because of drivers like you slowing down the traffic behind you and not entering the roundabout as quickly, keeping them going. One of the things we know, up to about 35,000 cars a day, probably really depends more on the peak hour, but up to about that amount per day, we can move 4 to 5 times the amount of traffic through a roundabout than you can a stoplight. And here's the other big cost savings. I think the civil engineering answer to congestion so many times is, let's add lanes between all the stoplights, and all we're really doing is building a bigger parking lot to get more cars through that green cycle.
Now, when you began to build roundabouts, did you get resistance either from the public or from businesses that said, this is too weird, we don't want it?
We had some, and I pointed out that, you know, England has 10,000, France has 14,000, and they ought to get out and see what the rest of the world's doing. We actually, the first two roundabouts we built in Carmel, was a new road on the edge of town, literally a new road, and so people weren't traveling on it to see them being built. So we cut the ribbon on that road, and suddenly people realized that we built two roundabouts on it. We immediately started doing lots of public education and explaining the statistics, and our community loves them at this point. We couldn't take out a roundabout. In fact, everybody wants one near on the street near their house. Tremendous public acceptance in Carmel about a roundabout program.
Have you had to acquire additional real estate to build the roundabouts?
It depends, of course, on the intersection, on the grade, on the size of the roundabout, and so on. One of the things I should point out is it's counterintuitive. The smaller the roundabout, the safer it is. And that's the problem. Some people confuse rotaries and traffic circles in the Mid-Atlantic and New England states with roundabouts, and they're very different animals. Roundabouts, small. You don't switch lanes once you're in it. You get your lane before you go in, if it's a two-lane roundabout or a three-lane roundabout, and you stay in that lane. The rotaries and traffic circles are very different. You don't have that angle as you go in. And the accident rate's higher in those. So we're talking about the modern roundabout. And so the land requirements aren't that great because of the smallness of the circle. Maybe 175 feet diameter from curb to curb. The key, though, And this is where you have more flexibility than with a stoplight, because with a stoplight, you have to be very, very careful with your sight lines. The roundabout's easier. Let's say you've got buildings on three corners of the intersection, but you've got some empty or land that's not being used for a building on the fourth corner. You're able to jog the street before it gets to the roundabout, sort of move that roundabout over on that empty corner. So when it comes to land acquisition costs, even though it's slightly more, the roundabout can be much more flexible, and that saves cities a great deal of money. In fact, we had jogged, the first time we did that, it was about 1999, we're installing a roundabout, and there was a big cross-country natural gas line coming through. And so our city engineer, she said, you know, if we moved it over to the side and jogged the roads going into it, we wouldn't have to pay up to $500,000, I think was the estimate, to move that natural gas pipeline. So we did that. Then we noticed that the accident rate at that particular roundabout, where all the roundabouts were much better than traffic lights, this one was even much better than the other roundabouts. And we determined, now in the U.S. DOT standards, by jogging the road slightly, 50, 75 feet back from the entrance to the roundabout, it gets people to slow down before they get to the roundabout. As a result, the accident rate goes down even more.
We pause our podcast for a moment to thank our sponsor, Wiss Janney Elsner Associates, engineers, architects, and material scientists who are solving problems throughout the built world. Visit their website at www.wje.com.
So you're saving money in terms of installing and maintaining traffic signals. Does it cost more in the other direction because of the need to maintain the plantings or whatever is in the center of the roundabout?
Yes, we do spend some money in that. We probably spend $25,000 to $30,000 installing landscaping and irrigation. But I think that helps our property values in those neighborhoods. I'll tell you another savings. We got rid of our jaws of life in our community. It hadn't been used for years because we just weren't getting the high-speed crashes that we used to get. Our neighboring community had one. We had 12 firefighters on that crew to handle that equipment, 724. We absolutely got rid of that unit, saving us $1.5 million a year.
Now, you mentioned that the roundabouts is distinguished from rotaries on the East Coast where there are multiple lanes and big roads feed into them. If I understood correctly, you're saying the roundabout by design is a single lane. Does that...
No, okay. Not quite what I said.
Okay.
We have double lane roundabouts. We're about to build our first triple three lane roundabout. There are two major differences. It's the rotaries in New England, for instance, they're bigger circles and you're not angled as you enter the rotary. And so you still get the T-bone accidents at the rotary that you don't get in the roundabout. And because those circles are bigger, you're allowed to switch lanes in them, and that's additional potential conflict points. And because the circle's bigger, drivers can go faster, and so the accidents that do occur are more severe.
Is there a limit to the size of a road that can feed into a roundabout? You know, how fast,
there's
how heavy traffic?
There's a limit to the peak hour traffic that a roundabout can handle. Now, the Brits have actually gone back and signalized some of their roundabouts. What we try to do when we get to that level of traffic volume, we separate the grade. If you were to Google or use a search engine to find Keystone Parkway in Carmel, hit the image tab, you'll see pictures of what we did at six intersections along this major road. Used to be a stoplight that had a five-minute cycle if you hit it wrong. We lowered the main road. The cross streets, we installed bridges and teardrop-shaped roundabouts, using about 10% of the land we would have used had we done a tight diamond signalized interchange. We took only three houses for these six intersections. Had we done a tight diamond, we would have taken 46 houses. We were getting about 220 accidents a year. We've lowered that by close to 90%. We were getting fatalities on almost a yearly basis on these intersections. We haven't had one since we did the roundabouts. Take a look at those pictures. It's really a neat configuration, and it's very tight, and it's a good solution. And that's really, I think, the best answer once you get over the 30,000 cars a day or so that a roundabout can handle. At that point, you really need to separate the grade of the two roads.
And I'm just curious, do you have a sense of what percentage of traffic accidents occur at intersections?
Oh, I think it's up in the 80 to 90% level. One, I don't have it off the top of my head, but I think it's very, very high.
How much does it cost? And I know the one you just described was a lot more complicated, but a typical single grade roundabout, how much does that cost to do from scratch?
There's a lot of variables, and I need to say what those are. Land cost. You know, if you're out in the country somewhere, it might be $7,000 or $8,000 an acre. If you're in a busy city, it could be $1 million for a fraction of an acre. depends whether a building has to be moved or torn down. And then it depends on the amount of utility relocation that you have, which is why we moved that one I mentioned. But if you just look at construction cost, generally, and this is a general statement because everyone's different, depends on sight lines and whether you have to grade a hillside to get the sight lines right. But say you're on flat land, and not counting the land cost or the utility relocation, which varies wildly, I'd say a couple hundred to $250,000 for a roundabout.
So what's the position of the State Department of Transportation on the roundabout program that you've put together?
We have home rule in Indiana, so I'm responsible for about 460 miles of roads. We also have a couple state roads running through the city. When I started this program back in the late 90s, we had a lot of skepticism from the State Department of Transportation. We're all working to make roads safer. They questioned it because they weren't familiar with it, and it was an older group of engineers. But over the years, we've seen those attitudes change drastically. And today, the Indiana Department of Transportation has actually incorporated roundabouts and is building them.
I'm curious. I'm picturing myself a pedestrian approaching one, and at least in my mind, I can't figure out how I would handle it.
Oh, good question. First of all, the statistics, pedestrians as well as bicyclists are far safer in a roundabout than a traffic light. So you've got a yield bar right as you enter, which is the triangular shape bar running across your vehicular travel lane. And so the car stops there. One car length back from that yield bar, not a stop bar, but a yield bar, is a crosswalk. And there's an island there. So you only have to look one direction. The pedestrian can then stay on that little island out in the middle and then look the other way and cross. But by crossing one car length back, generally speaking, unless you're at the busiest hour, you're not going to have too much traffic.
How is that crosswalk marked? Is it painted on the pavement?
Yeah, traditional crosswalk symbol. And then we have warning signs as well with the pedestrian, you know, the typical standardized pedestrian sign as well before you get there.
So what's really happening is that the motorist first has to address a pedestrian wishing to cross and then faces the decision about entering the roundabout.
Yes, they need to be going slow enough. If a pedestrian were to make a mistake and step out in front of the vehicle, they would stop. Generally speaking, we'd want the pedestrian is going to wait till the car passes, then walk across that travel lane. We have yet to have, I think we had one pedestrian accident, somebody who had their foot on the brake and literally was talking on their phone or something and slipped. That's one in now 16 years of roundabouts.
And just to be able to imagine it, I guess if there's planting in the middle, does that mean as a pedestrian, I'm not crossing through the middle, I'm making my way around the roundabout, is that
You're
right?
You're making your way around the edge, yes.
Mm-hmm. And most of those places, do you have sidewalks in Carmel?
We do have sidewalks or bike paths. Alternatively, we have 125 miles of bike paths, and that tends to be our standard cross-section for a street that would have a roundabout. It would be a 10- or 12-foot bike lane on each side of the street. And so that bike multi-use path comes up to the crosswalk. It has an ADA ramp to the crosswalk. You go across. You'd have a break in that island where you could seek refuge if it's busy traffic. Stay on the island until the other lane clears and then cross.
Are you getting calls from
bicyclists, for instance, could go through with the vehicular traffic very easily because they would be moving about the same speed as a car going through a roundabout, or they could take the side path.
Are you getting calls from other cities asking you how they can do it too?
Yes, I've spoken in at least a dozen states at this point, and we've had dozens of cities visit Carmel and hopefully do some good by sharing our success with other places.
So with you having now, it sounds like if you're talking late 90s, at least 15 years of experience doing this, what thumbnail advice would you give for a mayor that was just embarking on it?
Lots of public education in the beginning.
Interesting, because it certainly can be controversial to make a change like that. But clearly you've had great success with this, and you're on the tour map, but you're not very far from us, so I'm going to put you on my agenda and try to get down and visit.
Oh, we'd love to have you visit. We've got a great concert hall we built, and we're a suburb that decided to build a downtown through public-private partnerships. So we've got a 1,600-seat concert hall and small theaters and a downtown that's all walkable, pedestrian-friendly. We'd love to host you.
Well, there's a lot to see, and we'll make sure we do see it. Thank you so much for spending the time to educate us about roundabouts this morning.
It was great to be with you.
All right. Have safe travels.
Thanks a lot.